Mike Adams here with a survival podcast update here. I was interviewing Dan yesterday from iAllegedly, and I asked him a question. He lives in California. He said near Anaheim. And by the way, that's a fascinating one-hour interview. If you want to check that out, it's on my channel page on Brighteon. Just look for it there. Look for Dan, iAllegedly. And we're talking about asset protection. But I asked him, I said, hey, you live kind of close to high-density population centers there near Anaheim, California, near Disneyland, near L.A., really. I said, do you have a bug-out plan? And he said, yeah, not only does he have a bug-out plan, he's got prearranged locations for his family members to meet. He's got a daughter and a son, I believe, and other family members, and they agree to meet in a certain location based on what goes down. So, for example, if the cell towers all go down, there's no cell communications, they're going to meet in, you know, location A, let's say, whatever that happens to be. If something worse happens, I don't know, martial law, nuclear war, end of the world, they have a bug out location they agree to meet at where they've got extra supplies and they've got bug out, you know, materials in their vehicles and so on, extra food, water, emergency medicine. And he even mentioned, you know, self-protection type of equipment. So I was really glad to hear that because I get concerned about people who live in high-density population centers as we're going through so much instability in the world. And I also thought, by the way, you know, this family needs satellite phones or, you know, satellite walkie-talkies or the satellite text messengers, all the things that I mention from time to time as part of our sponsor, the Satellite Phone Store. You know, satellite comms are the thing to keep you online, keep your family in touch. When cell towers go down, the power grid goes down, or whatever happens. So I think I'm going to call Tina at the Satellite Phone Store and see if she could get a couple of these text messaging devices to Dan, and maybe he could use that with his family to keep in touch. Anyway, if you want to support that sponsor, they're sending me 15 units right now to donate to the border operators. I interviewed one of their team leaders a couple of weeks ago. You probably saw that. But the Satellite Phone Store is at SAT123.com if you want to support them or get some of their hardware so that you can have emergency comms. Anyway, that's not the point of this podcast. Although I should mention that Germany is now warning that their cell towers may go down because of a lack of electricity. Actually, this is covering all of Europe. But comms could go down very easily across Europe with a lack of electricity because the backup battery supplies for the cell towers only last about 30 minutes. And I experienced this myself in the winter of 2021 in Texas when we had that big deep freeze and we lost for 1 week. We lost power. I mean, like half the state lost power, more than half, I think. No power, no gasoline, no grocery stores were open. The roads were impassable. No water systems worked because they were all frozen. It was like a nuclear winter scenario for about 5 days in Texas. And that taught me a lot of important lessons, one of which is you must have backup communications that do not rely on internet connectivity or cell towers or anything like that. You got to have backup comms. But getting out of the big cities people are going to panic and flee the big cities in a massive wave of refugees. And what I actually wanted to talk about today is how smaller towns or cities or areas, how do you deal with the influx of the wave of starving, desperate people fleeing the cities? Because you're going to witness what Michael Yon calls a human osmotic pressure, which is masses of human beings pushing out of their cities and pushing into new areas. And they are, of course, desperate for food, they're desperate for shelter, desperate for maybe water, medical supplies, clothing, you know, all the common things that refugees might need. And the thing is that there are a lot of people in the cities, obviously, and very few people in rural areas. And rural areas of America aren't equipped to handle large numbers of desperate migrants just kind of flushing in. You know, a wave of refugees from the nearby city, you know, just flooding your town and demanding all of these things. And the question is, how is that going to be handled? Because I do believe that day is coming. how's it going to be handled? And the spectrum of how it's going to be handled can cover the, you know, the gamut from totalitarian to pro-liberty on the other end. So the totalitarian way that city officials, let's say, might handle this is they would say, oh, okay, we've got, you know, in our town of 20,000 people, we now have 20,000 new immigrants or refugees, whatever they call them. I guess they're not immigrants, they're refugees because they're all Americans, but they're starving, desperate Americans fleeing a city. So the town leaders might say, okay, we're going to require everybody to donate all your extra food and medical supplies to the city, and you're going to have to take in and house at least one of these refugees. And if everybody houses one refugee, then we can handle them all. And they might mandate that. In other words, Third Amendment violations. Like, we're going to quarter people in your home against your consent or permission. We're going to force people to sleep in your home, and there's nothing you can do about it. And they'll declare whatever emergency is appropriate, you know, in order to try to bypass all the laws. They already set that precedent with COVID. It's like, if we say it's an emergency, we don't have to follow any laws or rules or constitution and nothing, which is insane, of course, but that's the way they operate. But they're also going to try to take the food from you, which is why I've said recently, you need to start hiding your food. You've got to hide your food because food confiscation is coming. Again, depending on the area, there might be other towns where they tell the refugees, you know, go pound sand, or, you know, you're welcome to walk through this town, but make sure you exit on the other side. And they might even be guarded, you know, with sheriff's deputies or whatever to make sure they exit on the other side. Like, you can only stay in this town if you can show that you have a driver's license here, or you're a resident here, or whatever, that kind of thing. So it just depends on the culture of the town or the county of what's going to happen. But in the more totalitarian areas, you can imagine that, you know, let's say they're more woke counties or small towns in woke states, they're going to let the refugees just rampage across the town. Because remember, leftists are pro-crime and anti-police. They love looters. They love arson. I mean, when it's carried out by leftists, you know, when Black Lives Matter is burning down buildings and attacking police, the left loved that. They thought that was awesome. So if you live in a small town in a blue state, you should be prepared for the leadership of that town. It might be law enforcement leadership, like a sheriff that might be a liberal sheriff, or it might be city council or police department, or maybe even the governor. You should be prepared for them to tolerate mass violence and crime that impacts you to the extent where you don't even have any defense. And in some states and in some small towns, you can imagine those around, let's say, Boston, Massachusetts, or smaller communities in New Jersey, or, you know, Northeast places, or even upstate New York for that matter, they won't even allow you to defend yourself with a firearm. You can be charged for defending yourself against looters. Whereas in more red states like, you know, Texas, Oklahoma, what have you, Arizona, Florida, looters that just get shot, you know, most of the cops and sheriffs, if they show up, like, oh, looters got shot, you know, shrug your shoulders. Oh, well, you know, shouldn't loot. So it just, again, depends on where you are. But if you're living in a small town or a rural community in a blue state, you need to be aware of this risk. That in essence, the governor of the state can commandeer your town. They can commandeer your resources. They can say, well, look, we've got half a million or more refugees fleeing wherever, Chicago, New York, Seattle. And you're going to have to take them in. You're going to have to feed and clothe these people. And realize they're going to be like 80% liberals. So these are people who do not prepare. So they're not going to have their own extra bug out bags, you know, not going to have their own water filters or anything. They're going to be completely unprepared because that's sort of the Democrat way. It's just they mock preppers, like, you don't need any extra food. Well, turns out now you do. And then the other thing that's going to happen, because again, these are mostly Democrats who are fascists, they're going to come in and try to take over your town. They're going to say, well, we're here now and we get to vote, right? So then they'll try to hold a vote and they'll vote to take all your food. That kind of thing. Because it's the Democrat mob now. And if you are in that town, you're going to be subject to all of this insanity. Even if you're a prepper, they can come in and search your home and all these scenarios I've talked about before. Again, this is why you need to hide your food. And this is why you need to have an alternate bug out location so you can get out of there. Small towns could become police state areas because of the refugee crisis. And these refugees, again, they're going to be lawless because, number one, they've fled lawless liberal cities. They don't think the rule of law applies to them. They don't respect any civility whatsoever. They're just Democrat mobs, and they're going to take whatever they want because that's how they operate anyway. I mean, that's how they rigged the 2020 election. They just do it. Let's have thousands of mules stuffing ballots. Let's just do it. They get away with it just because they're willing to do it. They have no morals. They have no ethics. Need to understand this before they show up. Now, I hear what you're saying. It's like, well, what about the compassion, Mike? Yeah, I'm with you on that. I have a lot of compassion. I've already talked publicly many times how I've over-prepped because my intention is to share food and medical supplies and anti-radiation supplies and so on with a much larger community. But the way I intend to do that is to donate to the local churches when the time comes and then direct people to the churches because I don't believe that looters or law enforcement or whoever have the right to go ransack my private home and just take whatever they want. I've got my preps and I've got extra preps to share with other human beings because I care about human beings, but I'm sending those to the churches or whatever organization makes the most sense. It might be churches. It might be some food banks. It might be groups that are distributing food. Who knows? But whatever makes the most sense at the time, that's what I'll do. And yet this idea of defending your own home, defending the border of your own property, this is alien to leftists. They don't believe in borders. They don't believe in individualism. They don't believe in preparedness. They think that whatever exists is theirs to take. They believe in socialism or communism and certainly fascism. And so they're not going to respect your borders or boundaries. And if you wield a firearm, then they're going to call you a terrorist. Oh, you're a terrorist. You're trying to prevent people from taking the food that's rightfully theirs that you obviously hoarded from them. And the only reason people are hungry is because you bought too much food at Costco. And now you have a gun, proving you're an evil, bad person. And then, the mob will show up and beat you to death. And then, they'll call it justice. It's justice, right? That kind of thing. So really, you have two options in this scenario, and you have to decide what's best for you. You can either, one, fight for what's yours, defend it with lethal force, and then suffer whatever repercussions happen with local law enforcement and local crowds of people and so on, and hope you have a lot of ammo, hope you have a lot of spare magazines and so on, if that's the choice that you make. Or choice number two is bug out of there. Get out of there. Have another alternative bug out location with fewer people around and with more sanity where people understand the principles of being able to protect your own private property and that each individual is responsible for their own actions, their own preparedness, their own, budgets of how they want to spend their money and what they want to prioritize and so on. In other words, you're going to have to flee to a pro-liberty county in a pro-liberty state one way or another. Which means there's going to be a second wave of mass migration out of the small towns into the red states, okay? So just to recap, the first wave is the Democrats fleeing the cities, heading into the rural areas, and then overtaking or overrunning those rural areas and ransacking them and pillaging them because, again, they're Democrats. This is what they do. The second wave is going to be people fleeing the rural areas and heading to the red states. So those of us in the red states, we need to realize that some of the refugees coming our way are not the first wave of the city people. They're the second wave of the country folks who have been overrun. And they're going to need help, right? They're going to need help too, because they're going to they may not have any belongings whatsoever. They've been overrun. Even if they were preppers, they will be overrun. So to the extent that we can help people, we need to make sure that we, the prepping community, the pro-America, you know, the free states people, we need to recognize that a lot of the refugees coming to our borders are not bad people. They're people who have been displaced by the bad people. And we need to go out of our way to try to help as many as we can. And I'm not saying that there should be some kind of, quote, purity test or something like, you know, only feed people who voted for Trump. No, I'm not saying that. But personally, I'm going to be far more likely to be willing to, you know, to house or feed people who share common pro-humanity values, such as Christian values or values of law and order, values of honesty and so on. You know, I want to help people who can be part of a society that works, that functions, a civil society. I am not so much interested in helping people who are tearing society down, which is what the radical left does. I'm not saying that I would withhold food from some starving person just because they're a Democrat, but rather I would hope that resources would flow to those who are going to help with the solution of rebuilding America and reestablishing the rule of law and so on. And of course, I'm not in any way talking about race or gender or, you know, your homosexual status or anything like that. Happy to help gay people, people of any color, people of any ethnicity. Happy to help anybody, especially if they want to help rebuild society, because we're going to need to work together, folks. We're going to need to have community level restoration of America. And so you're going to have people who aren't, you know, radical left-wing lunatics and pedophiles that are trying to traffic or rape your children while you're trying to rebuild your power grid. You see what I mean? You got to have people you can trust. And that's a value system. And so we do need to look for that value system in determining who we're going to partner with, who we're going to support, who we're going to, you know, work with to help rebuild. And folks, the easiest way to do that is to ask a few simple questions about the Bible. If people know a few simple things about the Bible, then, you know, they're probably Christians or had some kind of Christian upbringing. They probably have more of a moral compass. And I'm no expert in the Bible, not by a long shot. Still haven't read the whole thing, but I could answer a few basic questions. I'm familiar with some passages, like somebody says, "Ah, yeah, name just three books in the Bible," right? Okay, no problem. Or what's the difference between the Old Testament and the New Testament? Or, you know, where's the book of Revelation in the Bible? Just basic questions. You can filter out people who don't have, you know, pro-civilization values. Something to think about. Something to think about. Yeah, little Bible quiz. Anyway, those are just some thoughts from my point of view. Hope you find this useful. I want to help as many people as possible, but I also want to help people who will help, you know, rebuild society. I don't want to help people who destroy civilization. That's not going to help anybody in the long run. So thank you for listening. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com, and also brighteon.com. God bless America. God bless each and every one of you. Take care.